Radio Prague News.
Members of the European Parliament are due to discuss a possible conflict of interest involving Prime Minister Andrej Babiš. The Czech population reaches 10.64 million, driven by immigration, especially from Ukraine and Slovakia, and a rare northern white rhinoceros is born in a Czech zoo. Possible conflict of interest involving Prime Minister Andrej Babiš is due to be discussed at the European Parliament in Strasbourg on Wednesday evening. MEPs are then expected to vote on a resolution on the matter on Thursday. The motion was submitted by the European Greens with the support of the European People's Party. A European Commission report leaked 2 weeks ago found that Mr. Babiš was in conflict of interest over EU monies handed out to his Agrofert conglomerate. Critics say that although he placed Agrofert in a trust fund, the Czech Prime Minister remains the beneficial owner, which is in breach of both Czech and EU law. Police have asked the Chamber of Deputies to strip an MP from the far-right Freedom and Direct Democracy Party of immunity so that he can face criminal prosecution over statements he made about a World War II-era concentration camp for the Roma. The MP in question, Miloslav Rozner, was recorded as saying in December 2017 that it was nonsense for the government to buy the land where the camp existed and to pay to dismantle the pig farm above it. He called it a, quote, non-existent pseudo-concentration camp, which Roma groups argue amounts to Holocaust denial, a criminal offense. The Czech population grew by nearly 28,000 in the first 9 months of this year to an estimated 10,637,794 people, according to preliminary data published by the Czech Statistical Office. As in recent years, most of the increase stemmed from immigration. Ukraine and neighboring Slovakia were the biggest source countries, followed by Romania and Bulgaria. The data also show a rise in the number of marriages, up 1,400 compared to a year ago, and a drop in divorces, down by 1,000. There was also a slight drop in the number of recorded births. Minister of Agriculture Miroslav Toman is opposed to a plan put forward by his own ministry to ban the training and parading of wild animals by circuses here in the Czech Republic. A source close to him said the minister believes that circuses would lose their meaning without wild animals and that he was angry when he learnt about the proposal. The Chamber of Veterinarians, meanwhile, has also questioned the need for a blanket prohibition. The government has approved a recommendation by the Finance Ministry and Czech National Bank not to set a target date for adopting the euro, at least for the time being. The decision is based on the annual assessment of the country's fulfillment of the Maastricht convergence criteria and economic alignment with the euro area. The Czech Republic will probably be compliant this year with all the Maastricht convergence criteria, except for the exchange rate criterion, as it does not yet participate in the relevant mechanism. A zoo in Dvor Králové, East Bohemia, has announced the birth of another rare northern white rhinoceros. The species is threatened with extinction, and the zoo has long been part of a global effort to breed the animals, which are native to Central Africa. The mother of the new male cub has given birth now 3 times in the Czech Republic. And finally, the weather. Thursday should be cool and cloudy throughout the country, with occasional light snowfall expected. Daytime highs should hover between -3 and 1 degrees Celsius. I'm Brian Kennedy, and that's the news for now.
Listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Daniela Lazarová. Coming up in today's programme, what would be the impact of a hard Brexit on the Czech Republic? And Czech students create an award-winning chatbot. Later on, an exhibition documenting early anti-communist resistance in Czechoslovakia. All that coming up, so please stay with us. As the the deadline date for Brexit looms ever closer, Czechs are asking themselves what the economic impact of a hard Brexit would be. A report published by Česká spotřebitelna says that as the country's fifth largest trading partner, the UK's exit on WTO rules could cost tens of thousands of Czech jobs and around 55 billion crowns. However, the economic impact would be too small to affect projected economic growth. Tom McEncrow has the details.
The Brexit saga has proven to be unpredictable and far from over, but as the deadline date of March 29th looms ever closer and the possibility of a hard Brexit becomes more real by the day, Czech media and economists are looking into what the various scenarios would mean for the country. Tereza Hrtusová is an analyst from the country's largest bank, Česká spořitelna, which recently published its own projection of how Brexit could affect the Czech Republic. Asked about how the impact on the Czech economy in the case of a hard Brexit, which would result in the UK leaving the EU completely and trading on WTO rules, she had this to say.
According to our analysis, the Brexit may cut the Czech GDP by up to 55 billion Czech crowns, which is 1.1% of GDP. It could mean a loss of 40,000 jobs in Czech Republic, of course. The sectors which will be affected the most are the automotive, electronics and engineering.
The projected cut in GDP is unwelcome, but unlikely to cause great impact, with the Czech National Bank's GDP growth projection in 2019 currently lying at 3.3%. A hard Brexit would lead neither to a recession nor slow down growth enough to cause economic stagnation. The impact would be relatively low because little of the actual value of exports is retained in the Czech economy. In the case of the most affected sectors, such as car manufacturing and electronics, retained value only lies at about 43 and 38% respectively, a surprisingly welcome consequence of what many describe as the fitting shop economy, which relies heavily on assembling products rather than their research and development. However, a hard Brexit would not just leave an imprint on the Czech economy, but also complicate matters for Czechs in the UK, says Member of European Parliament for the ANO movement, Dita Charanzová.
The worst case scenario would hit our citizens that live or study in Britain as well. Uncertainty surrounding the recognition of their academic titles and pension rights would arise. These questions are surrounded by a thick layer of smoke right now, and we would have to start unraveling them very quickly.
Whether hard or soft, Brexit is sure to affect the Czechs in one way. Britain is the largest non-Eurozone member, and its departure will give the Eurozone camp an even larger comparative voting majority than it has now. Furthermore, after Brexit, Czech GDP per capita is likely to rise relating to the EU average, which will slash the amount of EU funding the country receives.
Tom McEncrow with that report. Moving on now, a team of students from the Czech Technical University in Prague have placed second in the prestigious Alexa Prize contest organized by the US giant Amazon. The aim of the competition is to develop artificial intelligence for Amazon Alexa, capable of chatting with people on popular topics such as movies, sports or music. Along with the prize, the Czech team also picked up a financial award of $100,000. Ruth Franková reports.
Hi, this is an Alexa Prize social bot. Is it you again, Andrew?
Yeah, it's me.
What a faithful chatmate you are. How are you today?
I'm pretty good. Thank you.
Heading into their second year as finalists of the Alexa Prize competition, the Czech team set out to develop a chatbot capable of conducting fun, fluent and natural conversation with people on all sorts of topics, working with Amazon Echo, a brand of smart speakers developed by the company. The Czech team, led by longtime AI industry expert Jan Šedivý, spent close to 12 months developing Alquist, and just like last year, it was the only team from a non-English-speaking country to make it to the final round. I asked Jan Pichl, an artificial intelligence PhD student at the Czech Technical University, who recently ranked in Czech's Forbes 30 Under 30, to tell me more about Alquist.
Okay, Alquist is a chatbot which is a piece of software capable of having conversations with real humans. And we've been developing it as part of the competition, and the task of the competition is to develop coherent and engaging conversation, which basically has only one goal, and it is to entertain people.
Okay, so as you say, the goal is to entertain people, but what is does it have any practical use? How can it be applied in normal life? In what fields can it be used?
Alquist, as it is, can be applied, for example, for conversations about popular topics such as movies, sports, and users can learn some new information from it, because it can gather information from all over the internet. But it can be easily transferred to any particular task, such as a restaurant reservation or stuff like that. But basically, the algorithm as it is now is only to keep people entertained with useful information and funny facts and stuff like that.
Why did you actually choose the name Alquist?
We choose the name Alquist because Alquist is a main character of RUR play written by Karel Čapek. RUR is about a robot factory, and Alquist is actually a human, a builder, and he's the only one survivor in this play. And we thought that it would be a good name for a chatbot like this.
How have you improved Alquist since last year's competition?
We completely rewrote Alquist this year. So basically last year there was a problem that there could be a lot of situations which are repetitive for each user, and now it is more adaptable, and people actually enjoy Alquist more than they did last year.
How important is it for you winning the second place in the Alexa competition? Can it help you in your future career?
Yes, it is a great success for us. We are really happy for this opportunity, and obviously it can attract a lot of partners which can cooperate with us on further projects.
Student Jan Pichl ending that report by Ruth Frankova. A reminder that you're with Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, where it's now time for our main feature with Brian Kennedy.
The short-lived secret organization Svetlana, formed in 1948, grew to become the largest anti-communist group in Czechoslovakia, boasting several hundred members at its peak and operating in more than a dozen cells, mainly in Moravia. That's one version of events. Many long believed that, in fact, Svetlana was not only infiltrated by the State Security Force, or STB, but was in fact a creation of it, part of operations to ensnare counter-revolutionaries, those sympathetic to what is now known as the Third Resistance Movement. Other questions remain as to whether it was an inherently violent group or provoked into action for propaganda purposes. A new exhibition in Prague looks at the tangled history not only of the controversial anti-communist resistance group Svetlana, active in the late 1940s, but also of the battle for control of historical memory, where issues are rarely black and white. Called the Svetlana Case, the exhibition was prepared by the Institute for the Study of Totalitarian Regimes, or USTR, in cooperation with the Archive of the Security Services and the Czech National Museum. After sorting through more than 10,000 texts, from official reports and documents to letters and transcripts of interviews by surviving members or their descendants. Ahead of the exhibition's opening to the public, I spoke to USTR Deputy Director Andre Matejka. I began by asking him how long it had taken to put it all together and what questions, if any, had been finally put to rest.
It was about 2 years. Where the colleagues of mine had to do the research. The issue is that, of course, there are many facts well known about this case, but there are also many questions. For example, the interference of state security in the organization, where there are some opinions that the whole organization was mostly something like a provocation of state security, which colleagues of mine have proved, and they told that it's doesn't seem to be true. Finally, but you can...
Sorry, just to clarify, meaning that it had been thought that the secret police, the STB, had actually started the organization...
Not started, but it was the way how the state security tried to fight the opposition... was that they try to provoke violent actions. And because many of the... It's not only the case of Svetlana, it's also in other cases. Because many of these groups, they were not really keen on violent actions, shooting communists or something like that, because this situation after 48 wasn't war situation. It was a situation of a stable, more or less stable country, where it isn't necessary usual to shoot other citizens. And but it was for them, for state security, very good if they could bring somebody to make some kind of violent action, because then you could, via propaganda, tell these groups are terrorists, they are really violent and so on. Yeah. And using of violence was, of course, a very tricky point, actually, in this whole resistance movement. So that's why we do not necessarily finally learn what actions were provoked by state security and which actions were somehow authentic or somehow really coming out from the movement or from the group itself.
Svetlana's founders certainly were no strangers to violence. Most were former partisans, leftist guerrillas who had taken up arms against the occupying German army during World War II. So too were the main officers from the STB secret police who would go on to infiltrate and eventually bring down the group. But while both had fought for and believed in the cause of building socialism and an eventual communist utopia, the true members of the anti-communist resistance group had grown bitterly disappointed by the Stalinist government that took power in post-war Czechoslovakia, not least in how they themselves were treated with suspicion rather than being honored for fighting against the fascists. In fact, the short-lived group's immediate aim was to build the organization by recruiting new members and forming new cells, though there was a long-term belief that eventual armed conflict could prove necessary. There's compelling evidence that Svetlana's members stockpiled weapons and ammunition and, in exceptional cases, planned armed actions. They also helped anti-communists on the run. Mainly, though, Svetlana published leaflets outlining what its members saw as the failings, and indeed crimes, of the communist regime, says Andre Mateka.
There were some shootings with state security, but it was not the intention of the group itself, of group Svetlana, to fight, to shoot on the communists. It was as they mostly started with doing leaflets and doing informational campaign about the crimes of communism and so on. And the interesting point, the core of the group were the former partisans, that means the fighter in the World War II against the German in the woods and so on. And these partisans, even if they were actually ex-soldiers, they weren't, their attempt wasn't to start fighting with guns. They wanted to start fighting with ideas, explaining the communist crimes and so on and so on. And the shootings, they were there, were actually, it was a result of attempts of the state security to capture the members of the group and while trying to cross the border and trying to arrest them.
The group's main founder, Josef Vavra, known as Stasik, was born in the Moravian city of Zlin. There is some question as to whether he had infiltrated fascist groups in the early days of the German occupation, as he claimed, or had joined them in earnest and only later switched sides. And,
regardless whether he had exaggerated his role in the resistance later on in the war. But under threat of arrest by the Gestapo, Vavra Stažić did flee to Slovakia, where he later took part in the Slovak national uprising against the Nazi puppet state. Whatever his record during the war, he also later did form a group in Zlín to help former Czechoslovak partisans called Partokol. And then, in September 1948, the anti-communist organization Svetlana, which he named after his own daughter while living in exile shortly after the communist coup in Germany and later in France. He was eventually kidnapped by the state security and taken to Prague, where he was brutally tortured, accused of collaborating with the Gestapo and of murdering Augustin Schramm, an ethnic German communist and agent of the NKVD, the Soviet secret police.
Vavra Stažić was actually one of the leaders of the partisan groups in the mountains in the Eastern Moravia, which was actually one of the regions where the partisan movement was very strong. After the war, he, as a communist, as a leftist, definitely, he wasn't satisfied with the politics after the war. Firstly, they wasn't satisfied with the role the resistance fighters from the World War II got after the war. They were frustrated that even if they have fought against the Germans really hard and really, in fact, fighting because this partisan movement wasn't that this resistance wasn't very very strong in Protectorat Böhmen and Mähren. So and if they were real fighters, they thought they really should have a word after the war, and they saw that not really. They
were rather not trusted.
Yeah, they were not trusted, yeah, exactly, and then. You know, that was an organization of the ex-partisans created with the center in Prague, and these people from the regions, they weren't just accepted, and it was the start of the frustration. And then after 1948, after the coup d'état from the Communist Party,
the so-called Victorious February.
Yeah, Victorious February. He saw that many, many problems in the way that the communists in the Czechoslovakia ruled, and then he wanted to stay a communist. But as you have told, that he was an admirer of Tito's Yugoslavia, of the way of the Yugoslavian communists. Ex-partisans, especially in Yugoslavia, very strong, and was definitely a communist way, but not a way of serving the Soviet country and the Soviets. And that's why he took the action and started to organize this group.
Eventually, Vavra Stažić was executed by the communists in August 1953, although he never confessed to the murder of Augustin Schramm. And even though the SDB itself did not recommend such a harsh sentence. And yet, questions persist, at least in the popular imagination, as to which side of the ideological struggles, both before and after the war, Vavra Stažić and his comrades were really on. The picture has been further muddied because, apart from fabricating evidence and putting out disinformation, in some cases the security service also ruthlessly sacrificed their own agents, so as not to blow their cover or in order to advance some particular narrative of events.
Is it clear how early on this group was infiltrated by STB agents or sympathizers?
That's one of the things that isn't definitely clear. You know, it was very soon, but the issue is that the leaders of the group weren't STB agents. They were, of course, somehow tried to. There were some attempts and so on, but they were authentic leaders of the group. And of course, there were some other members of the group. They were related to the state security, but the leaders not really. And you know that their fate was very harsh one. Vavra Stažić succeeded to left the country, but he was kidnapped and brought back to the Czechoslovakia, and then assassinated.
He was hanged,
and you know that the reaction of the regime was a very brutal one. Over 400 people were arrested. I think 25 life sentences and lifelong sentences, sorry. And there were some 18
executions,
which is, you know, it's a very brutal attempt, and you have to take into account that it was in one region. Actually, it was not in the whole country. It was actually a little part of the country where the people were somehow related. There were some families, so it was a very, very harsh, harsh reaction.
Subversion is, of course, an important technique of communist conquest. Czechoslovakia in 1948 is an established democracy in Eastern Europe. Suddenly, a rash of strikes. Conservative elements are forced to resign from the cabinet. Communist deputies pound their desks. As the street demonstrations reach riot proportions, police brutality in putting down the riots is charged, and the communists take over the police. On February 25th, informed that the alternative is civil war, and aware of unmistakable threats of invasion from the Soviet Union if he does not capitulate, President Benes accepts a communist cabinet.
What is clear is that the first arrests came as Svetlana was preparing a leaflet to be published on the anniversary of the so-called Victorious February communist coup. And by the summer of 1949, most members of the group were in custody, Svetlana's activities crippled, and before the Stalinist era was over, dozens of its members put to death, along with others of the Third Resistance, following show trials. The exhibition, the Svetlana case, must be seen in that wider context, so says Andrei Mateka, as the issues and questions it raises still resonate.
The Third Resistance is really one of key issues of our politics of memory of the present day of Czech Republic, because remembering people they were fighting against the communist regime is very important. To know that not everybody was somehow just resigning, and that's why it's interesting. But also it's very interesting to make it on a critical way, and to, you know, to be open to all the questions they are. For example, the leaders of this group were very communist, actually. Yeah, they were fighting, they were communist fighting against the communists. And it's important to know. Yeah, they were not always, you know, some right-wing activists or something like that. Or even this infiltration by the state security. It's on time to face this question openly and to be aware of the risk that there are some actions that were provoked by the state security. And on the other hand, it's also important to remember how brutal the reaction of the communist regime was, how violent it was. There was no questions, actually. There was only very, very harsh repression on these people, and we have to learn that the dictatorship is capable of doing that, and as modern democracy we need to remember that in order to strengthen our democracy today.
Andrei Mateka from the Institute for the Study of Totalitarian Regimes, ending that feature by Brian Kennedy. And I'm afraid that's all from us for now. You'll find us at radio.cz. Our email address is english@radio.cz. We'll be happy to hear from you. This is Danielle Azarova saying thanks for joining us today and goodbye.